Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. Hello again, listeners. We've been away for a short break. Unfortunately, we're not joined by Michael De Silva, who is sadly indisposed this week, but we have the wonderful Ryan Hun. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, hello. Just to point out again, Michael's just a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, but indisposed sounds better. Yeah. And James Horncastle is joining us to discuss the Milan derby, the dramatic Milan derby, and the rest of Serie A. But let's plunge straight in. Before we get into Premier League, I really enjoy the Nations League.
I'm into it. It adds more weight to certain things. You know, looking at Germany might get relegated.
Do you know what I like about it? Which is fun. It's a bit like when you're at uni and you're playing pool and it's winner stays on. It just adds that incentive. You know, when you win, just because a friendly match, there's no consequence, right?
Yeah.
But the beauty of the Nations League is there's that sense of consequence and there's just enough needle. I mean, like, and you've got great stories like, you know, the Dutch are returning to prominence. You know, beating. Well, yeah, they're looking good. The Dutch are looking good.
Yeah. I think there's more of a case of Germany not looking that great at all.
The reason I'm going to jump in there again is because I'm always in danger of not giving credit to teams that win as opposed to great teams in decline. So yeah. As a United fan, it's always like, oh, United in decline, as opposed to...
You're a glass half full guy.
Exactly. Whereas I think the Dutch, we won't get to the Dutch right now because that's another podcast, but I just want to give a shout out to them because that win over Germany was a big deal for them.
Yeah, for sure.
And it needs a milestone, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean... Was it two major tournaments they've missed out on now? And the sooner that they can start being back to being a real force again, I think the better. It's just more fun, isn't it? Having
absolutely rumblings from the Dutch, good signs. But back to the Premier
good
League.
Good band name.
Back to the Premier League and a dramatic weekend. Although maybe not entirely surprising. So Chelsea drawing against Manchester United at home.
What a game!
Great game.
For a neutral, I imagine it was terrible for a United or a Chelsea.
Actually, it wasn't so bad for a United fan because I think my expectations have become quite low and it was great to see them play with freedom after Chelsea went a goal up and to see Anthony Martial playing.
Well, I have to, on my notes for the show, I've got Chelsea 2, Man United 2 and all it says is Martial is a bad man.
Well, that's very,
because
very
he
accurate.
Was brilliant. His two goals were great. And first half, I thought United were dreadful.
Yeah.
Like really, really poor. Didn't look very comfortable on the ball. And to be fair, I really think Chelsea missed a trick only going in 1-0 down.
Right. Yeah. But absolutely.
United have got a real problem from set pieces though at the moment, and it doesn't seem very Mourinho like. I imagine Souness was probably loving the fact that it was Pogba who lost Rudiger for the goal. Yeah. But unfortunately, I mean, whenever zonal marking is used in a set piece and a team concedes from it, it gets hammered. Usually by pundits. And I actually think that this is a prime example of why so many teams use zonal marking, because the reliance on one guy losing his man is taken away in zonal marking. And you see this, I don't really think Pogba deserves a huge amount of criticism for this, because it's he can't run through two men. So he has to run round I can't remember who the other two guys were, but basically Rudiger.
David Luiz.
Yeah, Rudiger goes one way. And it's kind of like a basketball screen, you know. Right. He just got screened.
Yeah.
And this is what happens when you man mark. You know, if you had a zonal thing there as well, then there probably would have been other players in that zone, and it might not have been such an easy run for Rudiger.
It's a funny result because it slightly slows Chelsea's role because they've been obviously very impressive this season. And it shows they do have slight defensive problems of their own. It throws up, you know, maybe that Juan Mata's been a little bit underused. And I think the football historians in years to come will be absolutely aghast that Anthony Martial did not make it to the World Cup. And they'll wonder about Mourinho's role in that. But it's funny. It's, you know, the kind of the undead, Jose Mourinho's sort of undead tenure at United seems to be rumbling on because, you know, that's an encouraging second half performance and people have come away feeling good about it. And I think he's probably safe for the time being.
Yeah, definitely. I think it must be a weird one to process because I think any United fan would have taken a point before the game.
Right.
But then in the context, you know, conceding a last minute equaliser, it's a bit of a sickener. But I wanted to touch on what you said about Juan Mata because I thought during the game, you just saw how much he brings to that Man United side when he's played in a central role. He's such an intelligent footballer and his speed of passing, like the amount of times he would lay something off one touch and just keep people involved and keep the ball circulating. I think for that United side, it's really, really key. They've got too many players, I think, at the moment who want to spend too much time on the ball, you know, going forward. As much as I love Marcus Rashford, he likes to run at players. He got dispossessed quite a lot in the first half on Saturday. Martial likes to run at players. Sanchez is, when he plays, is, you know, notorious for holding onto the ball. Having someone like Mata in the middle of it all, I think, just keeps it ticking and it allows Pogba to play a little bit deeper. Mm. I think that system works a lot better for United. I don't know what you thought, but...
No, I agree with that. I think that's right. And I think you need someone like Mata who sets the tone, who plays triangles, who structures the attack. Because if, frankly, Mourinho isn't going to create complex tactical systems, then someone like Mata can do that for him. He can defer that or delegate that to Mata.
And his role in the second goal was
extraordinary.
Key.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, are we going to talk about Mourinho kicking off? Because that was well funny.
Do you know what? I don't know if I want to. Only because...
Can I, then?
not because I don't, because I just think that the danger is of that being a narrative. Do you know? We'll talk about it.
It was such a tactic, wasn't it?
I think we give Mourinho too much credit for the mind games because if you look at all the fights he picks, no one replies to him. I just don't think he's as smart, strategic as we give him credit. Maybe not these days. In the old days, yes. But now... I mean, Guardiola's not paying attention to him. I mean, we'll get onto the City result. Man City won 5-0 against Burnley. No one's even talking about it.
Yeah, it seemed very routine, didn't it?
But no one mentioned it. Like, if you look at, like, even the social media buzz about it, I mean, it was barely registered.
Yeah, I think that sometimes happens in the 3 o'clock games, though, as well, when, you know, Man City at home to Burnley, 3 o'clock Saturday, you kind of expect that to be a...
But that's what they've done. They've made it into a procession. They've made victory at home into this kind of, you know, the routine affair. But let's get into a game that was far less routine. Cardiff Fulham. That was a cracker.
That was the best game of the weekend, I thought, in the Premier League.
I think so as well.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Great opening goal by Schürrle.
Yeah.
From distance.
Brilliant goal.
Absolutely
brilliant. And you kind of thought, all right, maybe this would be Fulham's day because Cardiff are... They've been struggling a lot, you know, especially at home. Not especially at home. They've been struggling away as well, but like they're not really, they haven't been scoring many goals. I mean, they doubled their goal tally for the season on Saturday, you know, so when Fulham went 1-0 up, you kind of expected them to run away with it. But Fulham just cannot defend at all.
It's awful.
9 goals in 2 games they've conceded. And initially, at the beginning of the season, they started quite well, or they looked promising, playing good football, good signings with Schürrle and Seri and Mitrovic up front. But yeah, they just cannot defend.
There was one goal in particular, if you get to watch the highlights, I think it's the third or fourth Cardiff goal, and the ball is lost early on, was sort of high up the pitch, and it's recycled, it just stays in the area, and no one can get it clear. So it's this awful mix of individual and systemic mistakes. There's just no coordination really in vital areas for them at the moment.
I mean, they've conceded 25 goals this season already.
Oh my goodness.
We've played 9 games. They really need to sort that out, otherwise they're going to really struggle.
Brutal. The worst thing is I can imagine them getting a 1-1 draw at Old Trafford. I just can't. Part of me is just dreading the day they find their defensive discipline being at Old Trafford. It would just be our luck.
It's really strange how now a lot of the stuff you say about Manchester United, is it just reminds me so much of peak Arsenal in the last few years. Where
doom laden.
You, there's nothing that will play a team into form like...
coming to the Emirates.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I'm Cardiff's first win of the season. And now they've actually... I didn't realise this, but Fulham have only won one game as well this season.
Mm.
But Fulham are in the bottom three now. And yeah, I mean, they, like I say, they really need to sort that out. Otherwise, they're going to go straight back down.
Liverpool got a very kind of Benitez era win over Huddersfield as well, didn't they? A 1-0 away, I think it was. They
ground
that out.
I thought actually Huddersfield were a little bit unfortunate. I'm not 100% sure whether it was a penalty for handball, but if it had been given, I don't think many people would have really kicked off about it.
Right.
But yeah, Liverpool are not playing well at the moment, but they're getting points, which is
do you know what?
Good.
It's a funny one with Liverpool because I just looked, well, their goal difference is plus 13, I think, and I think City is plus 23.
Mm.
And I think it will come down to a shootout. It will come down to two things, I think, in the Premier League. It will come down to squad depth and a shootout. And the problem is, and we'll get onto City just now, actually, I suppose, might be segue to City. Manchester City just have astonishing levels of firepower. Kevin De Bruyne has just returned and his absence registered barely a blip. Bernardo Silva has been superb. Riyad Mahrez has pushed Leroy Sané. I mean, he's strengthened all right areas. Mendy is back from injury. It's just...
yeah, they are...
at this point.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I said this last season as, you know, as an Arsenal fan who... it's my duty as an Arsenal fan to bang the Invincibles drum, but I honestly think that Man City side from last season was the best Premier League side I've seen.
But it's funny with City because what makes them so brutal is the variety of ways they can hurt you and the amount of chances they create. So you look at the opening goal, it gets squared, I think, by David Silva to Aguero, who scores from 8 yards out. They're so intense.
Mm.
So if you come out and play against them, they get in behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sit deep, if you sit off them, Riyad Mahrez picks out the top corner and it picks, actually, you know, will locate the top corner perfectly.
Even Fernandinho side-footed in top right. Bernardo Silva's goal... beautiful.
They just dismantle you. They just, and the only thing that will stop them, I think, is a grueling UEFA Champions League campaign. The only thing I think will wind them is coming up against the team like a sort of resurgent PSG. You know what I mean? Like that will dismantle them in the Champions League. Otherwise, I think this season it could be a procession for them.
Yeah, I think at the moment, I think the thing that a lot of the Premier League teams are going to struggle with in the Champions League is just where the knockout stages arrive. Because your key competitors have had a winter break and you haven't. In fact, when they're having a break, you're going into the most intensive period of football that you'll play this season. So no matter how good you are, how deep your squad is, that's going to affect you at that level. So yeah, I agree. That's when I think it's going to start really affecting them. And Liverpool did really well last season, obviously getting to the final, but yeah.
Couple other things to throw in. West Ham lost to Spurs, but the bigger story there is the Yarmolenko injury, because they've been looking quite good, haven't they, with him back?
Yeah, that's a real blow for them. And again, same with Huddersfield. I think West Ham were really unfortunate. You could see it in Pochettino's face, actually, when the whistle went. He looked like he kind of knew he'd got away with one a bit there. Mm. And Hugo Lloris made some really, really, really good saves. He's not been in great form at all for a while. And but yeah, he made some really good saves to keep him in it. I think West Ham deserved a point.
Right.
For sure.
And they've been good. I mean, I feel a bit bad for them because they have, they had a brutal start and they turned it around pretty nicely. And it's just, you know, it's just not their luck, is it?
Well, I mean, it really didn't look good for them at the beginning of the season, did it? I mean, we've spent the first few weeks talking about how much we feared for them. And I mean, they've climbed to 14th. I mean, they still lost six games, but was it they lost their first four, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't actually seen what the diagnosis is of the Yarmolenko injury. Do you know what is it?
I saw something about a few months, but that's sort of very, yeah, very preliminary.
I mean, that's a real shame.
Other thing I want to mention before we skip on to the other leagues is Wolves losing 2-0 to Watford at home. And Wolves are interesting because Wolves play fantastic, intricate football. They don't score very many.
Mm. The maybe. Betis of the Premier League.
Yes, the Betis. I love that. I love that analogy. So why, let me extend it because it's your analogy. Why do you refer to Wolves as the Betis of the Premier League?
To be fair, I mean, they've scored a goal a game, you know, and they've conceded less than a goal a game. So they're kind of steady. They're a little bit more, I wouldn't say flamboyant, but they kind of scored more than Betis.
Betis play some good stuff, though.
Yeah, Betis are great. They just can't finish.
Yeah.
Interesting that after all the talk around Wolves, Watford are actually above them.
They had a flying start there, Watford, didn't they?
They did.
Won four, haven't they? I think four or five?
Five, yeah. Above Everton. who are above Wolves, who are above Manchester United. So
the Premier League middle class.
Well, I mean, Bournemouth are up to sixth. I mean, they got a point at, against Southampton on the weekend, a 0-0 draw. But, you know, Bournemouth's very quietly
doing a great
kind
job.
Of doing a really good job. I mean, I'm really worried about Southampton. They're only a point out of the relegation zone, and they can't score goals either. There's only one team that scored less than them this season. Last season was the first time, I think, since they made it back into the Premier League that they finished outside the top 10. And they're really struggling under Hughes. And yeah, I mean, for the last couple of seasons, there's been a gradual decline at Southampton after being one of the clubs who seemed very focused and had such a clear strategy with, you know, a point in Pochettino and the way they signed and they sold really well. And there was a clear strategy there. I think the director of football or chief scout left for Spurs with Pochettino. And since then, they haven't been able to kind of replicate that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's funny because we talk about restoring and renewing squads and a squad ethos, and that's a problem that Real Madrid are really having at the moment. We'll get into Real Madrid in a moment, but what I want to do is take a quick break at this point and get into Serie A, because we had a great result for Inter Milan in the derby, and we'll be joined for that by the great James Horncastle, rejoining the Rabona podcast, one of the fan favourites, audience favourites.
Stepping in for Michael.
Absolutely, absolutely, after the break. So we'll catch you then. We're joined again by the wonderful James Horncastle. James, welcome again.
Thank you very much, Musa.
And James will be discussing with us the dramatic Milan derby. Well, dramatic, not so dramatic, but rescued by a dramatic last-minute winner by Mr. Icardi. James, what are your impressions of the match?
Well, it's just a great spectacle to be at. I mean, it never is dull. I mean, I know it was 0-0 going into the 92nd minute, and for large portions of the second half, it looked like the match was kind of drifting. But when you come out of the metro at San Siro and you see that stadium, which, you know, looks like a kind of city from a sci-fi planet, particularly as the sun is going down and dusk is beginning to set in. It's just incredible. It's one of the great events, I think, in football across the world. And yeah, before the game, the choreographies from both sets of ultras were, you know, they took your breath away. One from the Inter fans, which was of the snake, which is their kind of spirit animal, chasing away a kind of scrambling devil, and the one in the sud where the Milan fans stand, which was just a two hands ripping a serpent apart. So,
oh wow!
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the first half I thought was quite interesting because Inter deserved to win. Let's not beat around the bush, right, on that. But there was a sort of all the pre-match build-up had been about how physical Inter were and how much tougher they were than Milan, and instead Milan kind of came out and gave this impression that they were the reflection of their kind of manager as a player on the pitch. Their manager being Rino Gattuso, because right, they really kind of put themselves about, and Nainggolan had to go off injured midway through the first half, which he thought might turn the momentum back Milan's way. But Milan were very disappointing on the night. Really didn't show any of the kind of style and grace that we've kind of come to associate with them so far this season. They scored a lot of goals, but Higuain and Suso just weren't allowed to get into the game. So, but a wonderful, an incredible climax, the best kind of climax.
But sorry to jump in. I mean, I'm just wondering, are we wrong to keep expecting this beauty from Milan? Are we almost, I suppose, you know, as a United fan, we say, hang on to the Ferguson years, and it's time to move forward from that?
I think no one expected Milan to play in the way that they have done this season under their manager, Rino Gattuso. I think everyone's got their own kind of sort of predisposed ideas about what Gattuso is all about. And they've been sort of playing out from the back, playing the ball on the floor, very easy on the eye kind of football. There is a certain question mark about Gattuso as to whether he is the man capable of taking Milan, not back to where they were, which was, you know, sort of top of the European game, but making them competitive in Serie A again. Now, he kind of proved a lot of people wrong last year, both in terms of the kind of football that he could play and the ability that he showed in turning things around at Milan. But I think, you know, going into the game, I said this about both teams, they've had to go through one owner to get to the right one. And it seems that both Inter and Milan now have legitimate backing, and yeah, should be able to finally start moving in the right direction going forward. And yeah, I think when Milan were taken over by this hedge fund called Elio, which is, they essentially repossessed the club after the sort of brief ownership period of this Chinese guy called Li Yonghong, there was the expectation that they would just flip the club for a quick buck because they got it so cheap. But instead, they look like they're in for at least 3 to 5 years. They've made some really good appointments in terms of like chief executive. They've got Gazidis in from Arsenal. They've got Leonardo running the sporting side. The Paolo Maldini has come back to the club. So the Milan is starting to feel like Milan again for the first time in a long, long time. And I hope it's only a matter of time before they really get their act together and they are back where we kind of, you and I, associate them with.
Great to hear Milan are returning to something like their old selves. And across the city, Inter Milan returning to ominously solid form and now about to face a Leo Messi-less Barcelona. How do you see things playing out for them this season?
Well, Inter turned their season around in that game against Spurs, Musa. They've won every game since then. And you know, if you reflect on that performance at San Siro, yeah, I think no one would have seen it coming because, but for that Icardi kind of volley from outside of the box, Inter didn't look like getting anything out of that game. And instead, they've got maximum points in their Champions League group, which is much more than expected. Obviously, Spurs are on nil pois. They go into this double header against Barcelona with a bit of a free hit, I would say, but also, as you mentioned, with a real chance with Messi being out and this Barcelona side sort of being unable to manage games and to defend as well as we've kind of associated them with in the past. And when you've got, as we saw on Sunday night, when you've got a goal scorer like Icardi, you know, he only needs one touch and yeah, he'll make it count. So I think if Inter get anything out of this game, these two games, they've got a real, real good shot at going through, which I must admit I didn't think they might when the draw was made because of the respect that Spurs have earned in this competition, particularly last year. And you know, Barcelona kind of, I think, setting their objectives this season all around the Champions League. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a shame that Nainggolan is not going to be playing because he picked up that injury last night. There's a few doubts about Perisic and Brozovic, but I think they've got a chance. And that's more than many people expected, you know, back in August when the names came out of their hat in neon.
Fantastic. Well, so we'll be looking forward, Inter fans, with some optimism to that game. And the rest of Serie A, what's catching your eye in the rest of the tournament?
Well, I suppose this weekend it was Chievo, who many people think should not be in the league after the scandal that they were caught up in the summer, which was they were found to have been basically trading sort of unknown young players to a club called Cesena and other clubs for massively overinflated value. Cesena went bust and were kind of given a big points penalty before that. And the expectation was that Chievo would get the same and maybe end up in Serie B. Instead, they survived somehow, got a minimal points penalty. But that's really conditioned their season. So they made a managerial change before the international break. And the guy they brought in is Giampiero Ventura, the man responsible for Italy not going to a World Cup for the first time in 60 years, a man disgraced by that. And how does he start things with Chievo? He loses 5-1 to Atalanta. Oh, so there is this sense that there is this just like bad karma is all like sort of just it's just all kind of focusing in that side of Verona at the moment. And Chievo, who were once such a great fairy tale, are now getting their kind of comeuppance.
They were the darling. Well, that's such a strange thing with Chievo, sort of a Faustian pact. I don't know, but they were certainly, you know, was it the flying aeroplanes? I think they're very much the loved, adored team.
It's funny. They were the flying donkeys.
The flying donkeys, that's right. Well, maybe that was a foreshadowing.
but, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, Musa, they were were simpaticissimo. You know, everyone loved Chievo. You know, they were most people's second team because they kind of proved that you could, you know, it didn't matter where you came from. It didn't matter how small your budget was. It didn't matter that you were a no-name club with no-name players. You could mix it with the big boys and, you know, go into Christmas in their first season, top of the table. And it's incredible that in the space of 15 years, attitudes towards them have completely changed. And I'd recommend anyone to go and read Tim Parks, who wrote that great book, A Season in Verona. Go and look in the archives. I think he wrote an op-ed in The Guardian about Chievo and what he feels about Chievo back then. It didn't make him particularly popular with Chievo fans. And I think, you know, I think he's probably taking a lot of pleasure and enjoyment out of what's going on there at the moment.
Well, I'll be checking it out. I'm sure many listeners will as well. James, anything else? Juventus, perhaps the draw, and Roma losing to Spal was a surprising result.
Yeah. Spal are a great story. I actually spent some time there 2 weeks ago. Spal back in the league for the first time in 50 years when they got promoted last season. They stayed up and they now they're trying to build on that. Beating Roma at the Olympico, huge for them. They've just got some really interesting players who have been there since before Spal was Spal. And I'll explain myself in that, Moose, because Spal went bust. And when teams go bust in Italy, they basically... Yeah, anyone can buy the name of the club and the emblem of the club, but essentially, you know, everything, the paraphernalia that goes with it. So this club that was nearby Ferrara, which is where Spal were based, called Giacomense, the owner of that decided to buy the name of Spal, make Giacomense Spal, and sort of take Spal from the fourth division all the way up to Serie A. And Lazzari has been with them since they were Giacomense, you know, obviously played for Italy against Portugal. So, you know, I mean, he's a great story. And Roma's problems, they look like they were resolved. They still have problems winning at home. Their home record is terrible for a team that is looking to mix it with Juventus. And you know, I think the problem, I suppose, is when they started to pick up form in September and October, they were, with the exception of the derby against Lazio, against teams you'd expect them to beat, you know, your Victoria Pilsens, your Frosinones. So this transition from Alisson, from Kevin Strootman, from Nainggolan, to a much younger team is taking some time.
Well, let's hope that Roma can pull things together, because he wants Serie A to be competitive this year. And it does seem Juventus, despite stumbling, might still be in danger of running away with it, even at this early stage.
Yeah, I mean, Juve and Musa have been perfect this season up until this point, and I think they kind of took their eye off the ball in the second half of this game and just were trying to manage the game and see it out, which is, you know, there are no easy games in Serie A, Musa. So even though Christoph Piontek, the revelation of this season in Europe with Paco Alcacer, I think, in terms of he'd scored in every single game going into this one, he didn't score, and yet Genoa still managed to somehow get a point. I think this was a teachable moment, I would say, from Allegri's point of view, and that shows that you can't take your eye off the ball, even against the Rossa Blu of Genoa.
Right, and maybe give them to have a bloody nose so early in the season. Maybe it's a good thing in the long term.
Exactly.
But James, always a pleasure to have you on, and such a lyrical contribution for all our listeners.
Before we let him go, we should say, if anyone hasn't read it, read his please go and read his ESPN piece about the derby, because it was beautiful. That opening paragraph about strolling around Milan on a Sunday morning got me very whimsical about it.
Whenever I listen to James speak, I sort of drift into a kind of a reverie. It feels like a sort of Netflix documentary on... Not, if Netflix is listening, give this man a series of his own. But James, we'll let you jump on a plane now. We hear you're in transit. So thank you so much for joining us. It's a joy to have you, as always.
Pleasure.
And I hope to catch you soon.
Great. Cheers, guys.
Thanks a lot. Right, we're back from the break. And we're going to do a quick dart around the rest of Europe. Should we start with Real?
We have to. Losing to Levante.
Yeah.
It's wild because they've gone without scoring for, I think, almost 500 minutes. And then the person that scores isn't even a striker. It's Marcelo, who always bails them out, actually, in recent times. So they're really struggling to score. And they get beaten by Levante, and they're looking like an absolute shambles.
It was a really weird game, that. Really, really strange. I mean, Levante went 2-0 up. And then in that game, Real Madrid, they basically broke their record for the longest amount of time without a goal in their entire history. Like, entire history. 481 minutes before Marcelo scored to make it 2-1. But the vibe of the game was really weird. They were so sloppy. Considering this was a side who desperately needed a goal for a start, they were playing with an intensity of a pre-season game. You know, one of those like International Champions Cup or whatever things they are. It was really, really
odd.
Well,
it's funny because they lost to CSK, didn't they, in the in the Champions League. They lost 1-0 after Cruz error, and they had a Varane error here. So there's lapses in concentration. And I just wonder, you're playing for Real Madrid. You've won 3 state Champions Leagues. So you are, everyone's coming for you. So what may be sloppiness, is it a sloppiness, but you're also facing everybody's best every week. And you will get pressed, you will get closed down. So sometimes what looks lazy isn't necessarily as lazy. It's maybe the fatigue of always being at the top for so long. And then you look, if you factor in as well the fact that you've got Ronaldo who's gone now, and the attack, as Lee Roden pointed out on Twitter, it's basically been reconfigured around him for so long. And you've always got this like huge responsibility on different shoulders now. So, you know, asking Bale to step into that breach, Benzema to be a bigger volume goal scorer, but Benzema's never been the best finisher. So you've kind of got an attack which is not, it's not built to fill the gap that Ronaldo's left.
I find it kind of odd that Bale is now coming off the bench, and there seemed to be a real hope that he's the guy to get them out of trouble. You know, Mariano's starting games and just looks a little bit too soon for him at the moment. But going back to what you were saying about the kind of intensity, I think I'd agree with that on the whole, but Levante walked through the whole of the side to attack, and they could have scored a couple more. I was really, really surprised at how poor Real were.
It's strange because it's actually a good time for Madrid to have a Clásico and a good time for Barcelona to have a Clásico, because Barcelona obviously without Messi, but also Madrid would not want to face Leo Messi in the mood that he's been in. So in a way, it's a good game for both of them. I'm not sure it'll be the best encounter.
I think it was a terrible game for Real until Messi got injured.
Right.
Because I think that their current form and the way that they're playing, if Messi had been fit for that game, I would have really feared for them.
I mean, to be honest, I fear for most teams that play against Messi these days.
Yeah, for sure.
The way he started the season, but you're right, absolutely.
I mean, but Messi has been, you know, papering over a lot of the Barcelona cracks this season. They still haven't really clicked yet. As James said, you know, they can't defend that well at the moment, and they can't control games like they have been doing in the past. And you take Leo out of that, and that gives Real a really good chance. And I could see Perez keeping Lopetegui around until the Clásico. For him, politically, I think Lopetegui wins the game, you keep him on. And it's a big boost for the club, and it's a big boost for Lopetegui, and it's like, oh, it's the turning point.
Also, why introduce more chaos so close before
exactly.
the game? What I will say in Barcelona's defence, because they had a great win against Sevilla, which was catalysed by Messi. I think a goal and assist in 15 minutes were going off the fractured arm, so he'll miss 3 weeks. He'll miss the Inter game and the Clásico. What I'd like to say about Barca is how Arthur has come into the side and been tremendous and provided, you know, a measure of midfield control, because the problem is with a player like Coutinho, wonderful as he is more of a kind of a raider. He's not really a guy that takes tempo. So it's wonderful to have someone like him there. But what is a real sign and a real worry for Barcelona is the struggle of Dembele to integrate in the Barcelona team.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very stop-start. There was some really promising signs at the beginning of the season. I think Arthur has come in and done really well, mainly because of the fact that you've hardly really noticed him.
Right.
So he's definitely kind of introducing a little bit more of a metronomic element to that midfield, which they need. And actually complements Rakitic really well, I think.
Actually, let me just have a quick shout out for Rakitic, because Rakitic gets a lot, certainly online, gets a lot of criticism from Barcelona fans. But I'm a staunch Rakitic fan advocate. And I just think that he does extraordinary and essential work for that Barcelona team. And I think his contribution will only be recognised, rather like Paulinho's, only after he leaves the club.
I think he's amazing. He contributes so much. And I don't really understand the hate. I think it was like Barca's Aaron Ramsey.
Right, everyone needs a Pinata. Other parts of La Liga, so Atletico Madrid, with a strange stuttering, continue their stuttering start to the season, failing to take advantage of other struggles, and drew against Villarreal 1-1. Do you know what I think is going to happen, Atletico Madrid? What I hope will happen. I hope that their indifferent form in the league will catalyse them in the Champions League and they can make a real run of that trophy. So I hope they get just sharp enough, because they do have the players. You know, Saul Niguez, Thomas Lemar, Griezmann was terrific against Germany. And again, I mean, he has a thing for Germany, though. He does punish them in big matches. So, you know, it's not that was not foreshadowed by previous performances against them. But they just seem to be grinding into gear. And they're still not that far off.
No, I mean, it's all very tight at the top. I mean, there's only 4 points between Barca in first and Real in seventh.
Right.
I think Atleti are 2 points off the top. So after, like we said, after our doom and gloom future football podcast, it kind of seems to be that a lot of teams are starting to stutter around. Well, La Liga, especially La Liga this year, I think has been the best. It's been the most exciting start to La Liga in a long time, because it's, you know, everything's kind of all over the place. Espanyol are second. Alaves are third. The newly owned by Ronaldo, Valladolid, are up into sixth. They beat Betis at the weekend. Betis. Oh,
you have a pro Betis. You're a Betista.
Betis is my pro. Yeah, my pro Betis agenda for this season. They just can't score. They've only scored 5 goals this season, which is the lowest in La Liga.
Goodness.
Yet they're in what? I mean, they're up to, they're 10th, because they've only conceded 7.
Can I be dramatic here?
Go for it.
You know, there's all these likes of English players now going abroad to other clubs. I would love a leading English striker to go on loan to a club like Betis for a year. I won't name Marcus Rashford, but I would love a leading England striker to go to a club like that and just add the finishing touches to them. Because it would be, a club like that would be perfect. A club that needs a striker, that needs someone who can actually get on the end of things.
And you get to live in Seville for a year.
Well, absolutely. Like, absolutely. And the food, my goodness, you wouldn't come back.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if they can get some kind of finishing going, they could be really, really good this season.
There we go. So, hopefully. Marcus, if you're listening, if you want a 6-month break after the...
Dude, United fans are going to come after you.
Shadow. Listen, let's jump into the Bundesliga, because that is, by my money, the most interesting league in Europe at the moment.
Over 3 goals a game on average in every Bundesliga game this season.
And the actual league itself, Mönchengladbach, I think, second. Dortmund, top, and brilliant again against Stuttgart. Jadon Sancho flying. Werder Bremen above Bayern Munich, Leipzig close behind, Hertha Berlin. It's just, it's all happening.
I think we need to give a massive shout out to Sancho again, because Michael's not here. So, we have to, I mean, he scored again on the weekend.
Got the opener, I think.
Yep, Dortmund beat Stuttgart 4-0 away. And also, Reece Nelson scored 2 for Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim were 1-0 down on the weekend against Nuremberg away. And Nelson scored 2 to get them back into the game. And Bayern won. They beat Wolfsburg 3-1 in Wolfsburg. I mean, that was a good result for Bayern.
Bit of par for the course. But what I find fascinating about Germany this season, you know, Niko Kovac has this transition at Bayern. So they'll be back. I mean, they're returning. They're not far off the lead, but they're not there. You know, familiar, foreboding, formidable selves. Dortmund under Lucien Favre are doing real damage. They're front runners. And if you'd said at the start of the season that Christian Pulisic would struggle for game time and Goetze would struggle for game time behind Jadon Sancho, people would have laughed at you. Mm. Maybe not with Goetze but certainly Pulisic. But Sancho has just been a revelation, is now starting games for them, started as a sub and is now coming, you know, sort of integrated into the attack. Paco Alcácer is terrific. Well, he's always been a great player, just a bit unlucky at Barcelona, and it's also very hard with the specific demands of playing up front for Barcelona.
Yeah, just the wrong move.
Yeah, it's the wrong move.
I mean, you've seen how right club, right move, right scenario, right manager as well, maybe.
Lucien Favre is just the master of reviving careers.
I love Lucien Favre.
He's brilliant.
He's so great. Yeah. Dortmund are just so fun. Probably the most fun team in Europe to watch, I think. Every Dortmund game is a must watch at the moment. Really pleased with Jadon Sancho, because he's kind of, you know, called up to the England squad. First game back after international duty, follows it up with a goal.
What I love about Jadon Sancho is that he's here in Germany and he's off the radar, because still there's not that much clamour to watch German games in the UK. So he can kind of go there, get the fanfare for England, come back here and just do his thing quietly. And, well, I say quietly, I mean, everyone's watching him. There was a great report I saw about the fact that there were representatives from all this year.
I saw this. Yeah.
This week in Germany, representatives from all the clubs, because they're now looking at the young, England under 19, under 17 games.
Under 17 games, yeah.
Right. Because they've seen this crop that's coming through. Mm-hmm. They've seen Sancho. They've seen a bit of, you know, Foden as well at City.
I mean, it's a perfect scenario for clubs around the whole of Europe, actually, because they know that those players aren't going to make it, aren't going to get game time yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you're going to see a lot. We've said this a million times, so I mean.
But I'm really, I've got to say this as well, Reece Nelson at Hoffenheim, because that's even more of a brave move, because Dortmund has that established infrastructure. Hoffenheim is not that well-known a town. It's a very, you know, Dortmund's it's a working-class town, but it's a big town. Hoffenheim's a bit smaller. You're putting a lot more faith in the coaching.
You're definitely not on the radar even as much as you are at Dortmund, so.
But you get the game time. I mean, they played 8, won 3, drawn 1, lost 4. I mean,
that was his second
record.
That was Reece Nelson's second start, and he's got 4 goals this season.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, he's doing all the right things as well. Big shout out to Gladbach. Hammered Mainz, 4-0. Hat-trick from Jonas Hoffmann. And Torgan Hazard got the other one, and Gladbach are second now.
They turned over Bayern 3-0 in Munich.
Yeah.
So what I love about this league is that even when Bayern return to prominence, they're going to have to fight.
Well, they're playing catch up, and they're not used to playing catch up.
Right, right.
So Werder Bremen beat Schalke as well. So Werder are third on goal difference, only behind Wolfsburg. A little bit worried about Schalke again.
Before we go, I want to jump to France, because France have, you know, PSG as the front runners, and that I think is a side with Thomas Tuchel now that could do some damage in the later stages of the Champions League. They look like a more assured, composed outfit than they've been in previous seasons.
Yeah, definitely. I actually wrote a piece for the Rabona site it might be up by the time this podcast is up, about how quietly they're really, really adding substance to the style, you know. So they won 5-0 on the weekend against Amiens, and that extended their record to 10 wins, which is the best start to a Ligue 1 season ever. And they beat that record a couple of weeks ago when they beat Lyon at home.
And the Mbappe game, 4 goals in 13 minutes, I think.
And, I mean, that record is a long record. It stood for 80-odd years. And if you think of some of the clubs that, the French dynastic clubs that haven't achieved that, it's no mean feat. Tuchel is quietly doing a really good job at PSG. A lot of people in the UK, for example, would only watch PSG when they play in the Champions League. And I think that defeat against Liverpool, maybe they meant they didn't really take him seriously. I remember there was a couple of pieces that came out about how, you know, they're not really a football club, or they're not really playing football. And I think that was a little bit harsh, because for that game, they were missing Verratti, who is such a key player for them. And they still could have won the game.
And they're a team in transition. I think it's important to remember, you look at Bayern, for example, when you take charge of a super club and the players have an established way of playing and they have their methods, you know, you have Mbappe, who was, I suppose, a bit more of a free spirit. For both France, you know, for France, he's allowed to roam. For PSG last season, he was very much allowed to sort of float around. And now he's in a more constrained role, but I think a more productive role. I mean, the way he's scoring goals freely.
He's playing really, really well. And I think that one of the things, I mean, I won't go too much into it because I would recommend people go
read your article.
Read the piece. But I think Tuchel's managing of the situation with Neymar coming back from the World Cup, his kind of reputation was not great. And that shifting dynamic between Neymar going there to be the main man and Mbappe clearly coming back from the World Cup as the main guy at PSG. But also he's kind of got Di Maria back involved. Cavani seems really happy. He's changed systems quite a lot this season in various games and rotated really well. And young players coming through, you know, like...
Diaby.
Like Diaby, you know, he's playing really well. Timothy Weah is playing really well. Like when he's got minutes, Choupo-Moting from Stoke came on a free transfer, scored coming off the bench on his debut. There's something ticking there. And I think because of a lot of the attention that PSG get from being, you know, the kind of Jordan stuff and the celebrities wearing customized PSG stuff, and a lot of people forget that there's a football club there, and Tuchel's serious, you know.
Right.
I think even if they don't go mega deep in the Champions League this season, I think that he will definitely turn PSG into a real force in Europe.
Well, it's funny because as thrilling as the Bundesliga is, the Champions League is the least predictable tournament, and it's always unpredictable. But this year in particular, with Madrid struggling, but always, you know, Madrid being Madrid, I just have no idea what's going to happen there. And I think there any one of 6 teams I could realistically see, even at this point, holding that trophy up.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it before. I mean, it's hard to argue that Real Madrid were probably the best team in Europe in the last few years, yet they've won 3 straight.
Right.
So at the moment, the Champions League is very unpredictable.
Ryan, it's been an absolute joy having you here, and it's a shame, of course. We mourn the absence this week of Michael. We're
staring at his empty chair.
Staring at his empty seat. It's heartbreaking.
Just with the sound of silence ringing in my head.
Michael, let's have a moment of silence for Michael. There we go.
Get well soon, mate.
Get well soon. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Thank you so much for joining in and subscribing. Please check us out on @RabonaMag across all social media platforms. And we'll see you again next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.